Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 23rd, 2012. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet, including the high seas. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
It actually is March 23rd, too.
It is, actually, yes, yes. We got off the ship yesterday, and I believe we probably both had very long naps.
Yeah.
I know I did.
Yeah, I did.
And, you know, people always talk about this on the cruise ship, and I always think it's hogwash. But yesterday, maybe it's just because I was so tired, I still felt like the house was rocking.
I felt fine. I felt fine.
I was like, ooh, we're not moving. The house isn't moving. So that stuff does play tricks with your mind, doesn't it?
It's so weird. The first time I ever cruised, it bothered me, and I rocked for like a week. But then after that, I have not had that problem since. And even now, right now, Jeannie's okay, too. She usually rocks for about a week or so afterward, but I feel fine. And it was pretty windy, this last one. It was pretty windy, made us rock a couple of days.
Yeah, really weird how that works out. But obviously we're going to do our normal abbreviated Ante Up Poker Cruise show today, packed with lots of laughs and fun stuff. But unlike our normal show, which we tape on the ship, we actually can add in some news that happened while we were on the ship that we weren't privy to because, you know, it's 65 cents a minute for internet. At first, and I think this is really exciting, I tend not to get as excited as I think other people do with new concepts out there, but this, I think, I want to see how it plays out. So, here's the thing, it's called iSeries Live, you know, when those little eyes in the big S, like Apple, in fact, I don't even know how people can get away with that. Doesn't Apple own everything that starts with an I?
I think they do.
Maybe you can only watch this on an iPad. I don't know. But it's called iSeries Live, and it's a new concept from poker agency powerhouse Poker Royalty. And if people haven't heard of Poker Royalty, they have all... It's like the William Morris of poker agents out there. Yeah. They have all the big clients under their tent. And so on April 5th, they're going to have a 10,000 euro buy-in, 10-player winner-take-all tournament in Dublin, Ireland. And it's going to be streamed live so people can watch it. But here's the interesting thing is people will be able to bet on the players and bet on all kinds of other stuff during it.
Hmm.
And the players are no slouches either. Included on this first one is going to be Phil Hellmuth, Daniel Negreanu, who's the early line favorite, Maria Ho, Devilfish Elliott, a bunch of other people that plenty of people around the world know. So it's going to be a tough table, right?
Right.
And the players are going to be sequestered on the set, so they can't hear anything about the whole cards and all that. And bettors will be placing their bets on Paddy Poker, which is obviously not open to U.S. players, so most of our listeners will not be able to actually bet on this. But they can watch the stream if they want, just to see how interesting it is.
April 5th, April 5th, you said?
April 5th.
Yeah.
And the people that do live in countries where you can wager on this stuff are going to have a whale of a good time because you can go ahead and wager on who will win ahead of time. Those odds will be changing during tournaments, so you can bet on it in there. They have a bunch of prop bets, like will it be a pair on the flop, things like that, or who's going to be eliminated next. And then here's the real key to this whole thing is the players, these 10 players that are playing, will receive a revenue split on the money wagered on or against them.
Wow.
In this great experiment. So
in other words, if somebody says, I don't think Helmuth's going to win, I'm betting $10 that Helmuth won't win. And if Helmuth does win, he gets the money? Or is it no matter what, he's getting the money?
No, it's a revenue split. So I imagine it's going to be, you know, the VIG that comes out of it. I could be wrong. Wow. Obviously, when you wager your money, I mean, there's a little VIG that comes out.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what I mean, though. But he'll get some money regardless. As long as bets are being made on him, winning or lose, he gets some money.
Yeah, and it's kind of awkward how the release was worded. I'm assuming, I could be wrong, but I'm assuming what it is there's just a revenue split between Patty Poker and
the players
and the group of players, yeah. And then they split the money. I don't think any of them particularly will get more than the other players. I could be wrong.
But. I could just see now like Sigmund and Ivy betting on red or black flops online for like, you know, $50,000 a flop. That's crazy though. That's pretty wild. I never even thought about that as an idea. And then it's great. I mean, they have to be sequestered. They can't have cell phones. They can't have anything. They'd have to, you know, to avoid any kind of tainting of this or whatever. So that's pretty cool.
And you know, I think here's the thing. I mean, there's also, of course, Poker Royale already says there's all kinds of other possibilities for this format that they're working on. But the first thing I thought of is exactly this is what I thought might happen after Black Friday. You know, all that endorsement money dried up for the most part. I mean, obviously the Poker Royalty clients probably still command some big dollars, but not. I mean, they certainly hurt just like the rest of us, right?
Yeah.
And I knew people were going to have to go out and find a way to keep those revenue streams coming in. And here's a great example of a company that's getting real creative and to use the cliche out of the box thinking and to find a way to make sure that their clients are still compensated in this post Black Friday world.
I think I got the next great idea.
Do you?
Yeah, live streaming of sequestered jurors.
You can bet on which juror's going to vote for guilty or not guilty based on their face.
Exactly. Which juror is going to be the first one to stand up and scream at a person in the jury? Which one's going to be the first one to use a cuss word? Which one's going to, you know, be the first one to take a bite of their in-house sandwich? You know, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff, man. But it is a cool idea. It is pretty interesting. You know, they're always Patty Poker. They're always coming up ways to bet on things, and that's pretty much par for the course over there. So, pretty cool, pretty interesting. And I wonder if it'll branch out to more than a one table thing, because that would be kind of difficult. You know, I mean, I guess it would always have to be some sort of featured table or something. You know, that of a bigger event or something.
Well, you could still wager on win beforehand, but when the whole card cameras come into play, I think you're right. It's going to have to be just on that, whoever they can sequester, whether it's a feature table, a final table, or something like that. But
interesting. We'll see how it goes, man.
But, you know, hey, if they can make money on it, I guarantee you they'll find a way to make more money on it.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, then the other big thing that happened, actually right before we got on the cruise ship, but it's ramped up since we've been sailing. Card Player last week posted a story that painted a far more grim prognosis for Federated Sports and Gaming. And by far more grim, I think they pretty much said they're dead.
Right.
Yeah, you can't get more grim than that, I don't think. But anyhow, Federated Sports and Gaming, the parent company of the Epic Poker League and also now Heartland Poker Tour, who filed for bankruptcy protection last month. Among the story's allegations were that Federated's filing the bankruptcy court said the company wanted to use cash from the Heartland Poker Tour to fund short-term operations, including salaries for executives, and that Heartland had received less than half of the purchase price before this bankruptcy filing was made. And of course, we come back to see that Federated fired off a press release. You know, they didn't want to talk before to people, and then obviously, when people start saying stuff, then they issued a press release saying most of the article, maybe even all the article, was incorrect. So now we're left to wonder who's right.
Yeah. And yeah. He said. She said.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I did see some of that. I don't know if it was Pollock or not, his release or whatever. I saw something. Maybe it was on Twitter. They linked to it off of Twitter just before we got on the ship, and I read a little bit of it. And they pretty much fired back saying everything Card Player said was wrong. And it's like, I think that Card Player is loaded with award-winning journalists or anything like that, but it's hard to imagine that they've, like, you know, just created these stories out of thin air, you know.
Totally
so
screwed the pooch. Yeah. Absolutely.
So it's probably maybe a little bit of each. Some are right, some are wrong, but for the most part, it doesn't sound good for the EPL at all.
Yeah. I mean, well, part of how Pollock sent it off this last release was that we're real close to resolving this, which I'm assuming means someone, you know, buying them or giving them a cash infusion to get them out of bankruptcy, pay off their debts, and get moving. So I guess, you know, in a couple of months we can revisit it and see at that point what the issue is. But craziness, absolute craziness going on there.
Yeah. Yeah, and people even talked about it on the ship while we were, you know, there were people who brought it up and wondering what's going to happen to the HPT. Some of them were going home to go play an event they thought was coming. Was it going to happen or not? And
right.
So, yeah, a lot of speculation as to what's going on with HPT as well. It's going to take a while to flesh it all out, but it can't be good news.
Certainly, yeah. At least not initially, it's not.
Yeah, initially.
But what we know will be good news is I'm coming to Atlantic City and looking forward to hanging out with all of our good friends and listeners in Atlantic City. You know, last time we kind of planned this tournament, right? It went well, but unfortunately the room Harris Atlantic City that we planned in all night and ended up causing consternation, I guess is probably a $5 word when I can't think of a 10-cent word. So we're just going to keep it light and breezy this time. We definitely will do it Monday, April 2nd. We'll find some place to meet for dinner somewhere on the boardwalk, and then we'll just kind of be like roaming nomads. Going from room to room until we lose everyone, and I'm last man standing. But everybody should know, too, I'm assuming people that can make it to this meetup will probably already know this, but Revel, the brand new resort there, will be opening that very day, April 2nd, which I imagine will be probably a madhouse. So
yeah, might, chaos.
Poke our head in and poke our head back out. But if not, I'd love to play in that room too. But so here's the thing. Just follow our Twitter feed at Antiup Magazine for up-to-date information on where we'll meet and where we are at any one moment. So that way, you know, hey, if you if your car stalls and you have no AC for a while and you get there really late, you'll know where to go. Not that that would ever happen for an Atlantic City road trip.
And then a little further down the line, you're going to be, what, Minneapolis on the 27th of May? Is that right?
Yep, in Chicago on the 29th, and we'll get those details figured out here very shortly.
And then, of course, don't forget, we're going to both be in Vegas the week of June 25th. We got all of our credentials approved, so we will have official badges for the World Series as well, so we're pretty excited. We'll be able to go around and see some of the big stories and do our normal thing out there, but we will be there that week, and when things get finalized, we'll obviously update you guys. As we mentioned before, too, don't forget that we have our John Lanier event coming up, our good friend who passed away recently. We're going to have an $80 buy-in tournament that benefits prostate cancer awareness April 20th, 2 p.m. at Tampa Greyhound Track. And Scott and I are both going to be playing, and we've also donated a bunch of stuff for raffle prizes. So if you guys can come out and join us, it'd be great. It's for a great cause and for a great person, so... Looking forward to seeing as many of you as we can.
Absolutely. And all your favorite other Antiup segments here are Hotline Mailbag, Call the Floor, and O'Malley's Move. We'll return next week when we have a little bit more time. But right now, let's talk about this great Antiup Poker Cruise. That's the reason that you're listening to the show one day late today.
Tell me how amazing it was that when we got on the ship and our tables and everything were already in the room. Waiting for us. I mean, it was like, is this all going as smoothly as we think it is? We couldn't believe it.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite joys of the poker cruise is watching our great passengers come on the ship and, you know, go through the little check-in process and everything and get on. And knowing that they're totally oblivious to how much work it is to pull off this thing.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't say they're totally oblivious in a negative way at all. I just mean that you, obviously, you're focused on your own vacation and you're looking forward to playing some cards and, You just think that all that stuff magically appears. And some people I know, they ask, oh boy, how stressful is this? And of course, you know, when they're asking me, I have like four strands of hair left. And I think they know. And this particular cruise, it was amazing. It really was amazing. You know, we had no problems at the port where we always have problems. We had no problem with our truck, which we sometimes have problems with, you know, when there's agricultural checkpoints and things like that involved. And then, you know, once we get it off the ship, then sometimes we still have to find a way to get it on the ship, even though it's, you know, it's the absolute most stressful 3 days of my life are the three embarkation days. In fact, the point that the wife just, you know, buys super strong headphones to cover up her ears and just not have to worry about it. And actually without a hitch. And then, you know, we went to the entire cruise wondering what was going to happen, and we did end up missing a port stop, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But other than that,
yeah,
it was totally flawless. And then we got all the stuff off the ship in good order and got us home safely, and wow. I'm spoiled now, Chris.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot has to do with it being right down the street from our house.
That certainly helped.
You know, that really helped us. Helped us save money. Helped us save time. And we were familiar with it too. I mean, that's the other thing. You know, you're always got that anxiety of where is the port? Where is the, you know, the loading dock? Where, you know, who was I, you know? But this time it was, we knew exactly where to turn left. We knew exactly where to turn right. We knew exactly where to back up the truck. We knew exactly who to talk to. And the familiarity, nothing could replace it, really. And that really helped and lend itself to it. Plus, you know, it's just all the efficiency that of you now doing. This is the seventh cruise we've done.
Seventh cruise, yeah.
So you've learned to, you know, dodge all the bullets, like Phil Hellmuth. And so
we know the bullets to expect. So when they don't come, we're excited.
It was the least stressful time I think we've ever had as far as that stuff went. So we were happy about that. And, of course, a lot of great players that we are friends came on our ship, so that made it even more enjoyable and a lot easier on, you know, on the whole process. When they were coming up to sign in, you know, we had NYUP columnist Lee Childs and Mike Wolf, and, of course, Dr. Frank came back. Mm-hmm. He was on the ship, and our Oklahoma ambassador, Crystalyn Harris, she was there. NYUP PokerCast fan favorite Mike Faso was on board. Both him and Frank returning for the first time since the second cruise.
Yeah, that's right.
And our fan Thietza, she was a blast. She ate with us most of the time too, and I played all week with her. She was just a blast to play with. And then you have in your notes here, Faso was a rock star with people so excited to meet him.
It was hilarious. People were like, "What? You're telling me Faso's on board the ship somewhere?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you were playing next to him last night. I had no idea." So then I was you're dragging him from person to person, and Thisa just flipped out. "Oh my gosh! I gotta meet him!" As soon as he walked in the room, I'm like, "Mike, I guess somebody saw you." And, he was Elvis.
But did you ever, when you were in high school English, and they told you what the denouement of the story was? The denouement is sort of the coming down period after the climax, you know. To me, it was like, "Oh my God, Faso's on board!" Then they actually meet him, and then it kind of goes, "Oh, Faso's on board." Of course, I'm kidding. We had a great time with him all week. Ate dinner with him all week, and like clockwork, Faso and Dr. Frank both make the final table of our first NYUP Player of the Year event. Just like they always do. Every time they're on the cruise, these guys make the final table of our NYUP events, or at least cash, or do really well. Faso chopped first place, and Frank finished third. Frank had a massive short stack. When I say massive, I mean it was like one bet or something. And he, at the final table in ninth place, he had like 3,000 chips or something. And he survived till third, and he only paid four spots, I think, or was it? I think it was four.
Five
spots. Yep. And you end up finishing third. Those guys, really, I mean, they just, every time we have an event, they do well. And then I'm sitting next to Faso at the final table watching him when it gets the heads up. And when they agree to chop, like not even a nanosecond after they chop, he turns to me and goes, "I'm in lockdown mode now." And I'm like, "Dude, you just made a major score, and you're already telling me that you're in lockdown mode, that you're not going to risk any of that money? Come on!" Oh my God, it was a running joke all week long.
Yeah, and then of course the last day I walked in the room and see him playing. And I'm like, "Hey, what happened to the key that Al Gore put in the lockbox? Did you crack the code? What's going on?"
Yeah, he played a lot after that, but you could tell he was doing his little home game thing where he would keep like his profit to the side. He'd only risk whatever was there and but it was funny. We had a lot of fun with that, you know, busting his chops all week. But you didn't play as much.
No, I guess if you look back at the hours, I played a long session one night until the room closed, which is uncharacteristic of me because, you know, I'm usually in bed at 10 o'clock in real life.
Right.
And I extend it to maybe midnight on a cruise because, you know, I'm like, woohoo, having fun. I tried to help get some games started, and so I played just a bunch of short sessions. And of course, you know, when you're playing just to get the games going and having fun, you end up not playing your best. So I didn't have one winning session the entire cruise. Not a bad B story here. I didn't lose all that much money. But the only time I did have a winning session was at No Limit Hold'em, of course. Isn't this like the second time this has happened to me?
Oh, yeah.
All the games that I know really well and I play really well, I can't seem to win. And then I sit down at No Limit Hold'em. And of course, that session I played for about a half an hour and flopped a flush. And that's where all my profit came from. Hard to screw up flopping a flush, I think.
It's funny because during the Pretty sure it was during the cruise. I talked to someone about that, and they said, it's funny that Scott avoids Nolan and Hold'em like the plague, because they really feel like you have the game for Nolan and Hold'em and not Limit, yet you enjoy Limit. It's funny, and it's more of a conversation for us to have in private.
Yeah.
but it does seem like that, because you know, a lot of times you're always saying on the show that you don't have heart, but we know when we play you, you're always kind of a loose... When we're playing Limit, you play it so loose, and we never could put you on two cards, and yet that'd be perfect for No Limit Hold'em,
but
you don't have the heart to do it, and if you only had the heart, you'd have the perfect game for it. So we talked a little bit about that. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it was pretty funny. But you had other stuff that you did. You did play in our tournaments, didn't you?
Well, I played the one, Jordy, our great poker manager, decided to add to the schedule this time. Two of these little $20 tournaments. Actually, we ended up doing a third one because we did make one port stuff. And I think these are interesting. And we were talking with the dealer and the one that I played it, that he would really be interested in some kind of pro breaking down this tournament and offering strategy, because it ended up being a lot of math involved, and not the math in how many outs I have, that kind of stuff. But the structure of the tournament required you to think beyond poker. And essentially what it was a one-table shootout. It was just like a single table with as many as 12 people. We crammed 12 people around the table for these things. And it's a winner-take-all. So one winner gets all the money, everybody else gets bupkis.
Right.
Right? And you play three 20-minute levels. The blinds get pretty gnarly at the end each time. I don't know if they doubled, but they're pretty significant. And when the timer went off after 1 hour, the tournament director announced that there would be one final hand after that. And then if there were more than one player left, it would go to a chip countdown. And so Laura played in the first two of these. Actually, she played all three of them, but she played in the first two. And she finished third at her table in one and fourth in the other. And she was telling me, hey, people were kind of yelling at me that I wasn't playing right, and she always hates that. That's the worst thing you could do.
Yeah.
Because then she starts getting all nervous about blah, 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 blah. Well, and I didn't get a chance to really explain to her what people were meaning is, you know, if you're down to three-handed and you know you've got 5 minutes left and you've got a really short stack, you can't be folding anything at that point. You need to just be shoving it in with deuce tray and hoping to double triple up, because once the time's up, you can't do anything else, right?
Yeah, no, exactly.
So I finally played the last day. I'm like, you know, hey, put me on as the last alternate, and I always want all of our players to be able to play and not take a seat. So they got through all the alternates, and they said, all right, Scott, you're in. So I played, and I went down to three-handed, and I made an absolute fatal error on the second to last hand. The first couple of hands before that, it was a little short stack, and I did exactly that. I was just pushing with anything. I had like a deuce four and ended up going runner, 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 runner for flush. It tripled up, just totally driving people crazy. But that's what you have to do in these things. You can't sit around and wait for hands. So with three left, we were all about even in chips. Somebody, obviously, we weren't exactly even, but I was on the button when they announced that there would be one more hand if the shuffle hadn't started. Our shuffle had started, so we knew we had two more hands, right? And I looked down at like 10-4 or something like that, and I folded the button, and then the other two players got it all in. And I didn't realize at the time that that's exactly what I didn't want to happen, because whoever was going to win that hand was going to have more chips than me, and there's nothing I could do on the final hand to win.
Right, to make them
essentially
call.
I took a gun to my head by folding that hand.
Yeah.
When I guess I wasn't thinking through enough to think that, you know, obviously if there's just a bet and a raise, a bet and a fold or something like that, then we would have all got it all in the last hand. But I needed to shove there and be pro because I was essentially under the gun there. And so I couldn't put my fate in somebody else's hands.
So almost always the penultimate hand is going to be the most important hand, unless you have a big stack and then two stacks that could catch you on the last hand. And then it's going to be a coin flip for you whether or not you should just write it. You know, if they both call on the last hand, the one goes all in and one calls, you know someone's going to have more chips and you have to call no matter what, right? On the last hand, too. So the penultimate and the ultimate hand are the two most important hands of the entire tournament.
Yeah, because essentially what happened is, you know, the one guy won most of the chips, The other person had him covered, but was short stacked on the last hand. There was nothing to do. I mean, he was first act at that point. I turned to him, I'm like, you gotta do something. You can't just sit there. He's like, oh, okay, well, I fold. I'm like, yeah, that's what you need to do.
Yeah.
Once you fold, you win.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was doing all those calculations all the way up until when it really counted. And that's what really killed me. It really took me like 4 or 5 hours to get over the fact that I was just an idiot. It was a 20-hour tournament, so, I mean, it was $240. And I still would have had to get lucky on that 10-7 hand, and then after that, probably would have got lucky on the last hand. So there was some luck involved. But I guess from an outsider's point of view, I think that's what they would think this tournament is all luck.
Well, you'd have to get to that point, though. You can't just get lucky to get to that point. So you still have to have skill to get to the point.
There's
and then
strategy involved and when to stay out of people's way. You know, once you knock somebody out, you're closer, obviously. But at the same time, you don't want somebody to get a massive chip lead and not be able to catch it up. I mean, at one point, I think with four-handed, I actually let it slip to the chip leader at the time. I'm like, if I was you, I'd just be folding every hand. And everybody's like, oh, yes, yes. I'm like, oh, I know, I'm sorry. And but it's true. I mean, if you get to the point where, I mean, again, you're doing the math. If you figure out that you have more chips than the other remaining players combined, then you just got to figure out what the blinds are going to cost, you can just lock down and win it.
Yep,
there's nothing else they could do.
Yep, don't play any more hands.
But I think it's a really good concept, and I think we had some fun. People kind of liked it. We'll probably try to do more of them on future cruises, maybe in a different way. But definitely a reminder to people, when you sit down in a tournament that's a little different than a normal, you know, be sure you understand the rules and start thinking of what the strategy is beyond the poker strategy.
Yeah. Well, I only played one No-Limit Hold'em session as well. I got very fortunate to double my buy-in, actually a little more than double my buy-in. But really, I played 3-6 horse and or hoe every single day and night, and I won every session.
Yeah, it's great that we got those games going every day.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and a lot of times we had to be the ones getting it started, like we get a couple of the crew members to play with us or whatever, but it was great. I won every session but one, so that was kind of cool. A lot of little things came up, a lot of hands that I probably could talk about on the show, but I won't. I just, again, Omaha continues to be the most frustrating game in the world for me. But I'm not going to talk about that. One funny hand came up during the No Limit session and was one of the basic catalysts for me doubling my buy-in. And I thought it was funny because it came against Lee Child's dad. And I never actually told anybody. I didn't tell Lee. I wanted to tell Lee and have a joke about it. It was the reason why I played the hand. His dad raised, and I looked down at Ace-10. And I thought, all right, this would be funny for the show if I call and win with Ace-10, you know. So it was Ace-10 of diamonds. So I called his raise. And I was in position. I was out of position. He was in position on me. And when the flop came, I said, please, 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 just any kind of flop that I can win this hand with so I can, you know, talk to Lee about it and joke around. And I never did. But I had Ace-10. The flop came King-Queen-Jack. And I was like, well, I guess that's the flop I'm looking for. So I checked to Mr. Childs, and he made a decent bet. And for me to raise would have been the rest of my stack, so I just shoved. And he thought about it for a minute. He called with King-10. And so he had, you know, a pair, top pair and open-ended. And then the board paired, and I'm like, oh, my God. If he gets a, you know, full house, runner, full house on me, I'm just going to vomit all over our nice new felts. So, but it didn't happen. I ended up winning. And so I really thought that was pretty funny. But that, after that, it was time for lunch. Oh, no, somebody needed to see, because I won't play if a real passenger wants to play.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I always get up. So somebody needed to see it. I got up, and I cashed out for more and doubled my buy-in. So that was nice. But I just thought it was funny that the Cosenza came up against Lee Child's dad, and I won with it. And but I played a lot of Chinese poker, too, a decent amount, again, on this cruise. And I lost $2 after hours and hours of playing. I had a really bad session one time, but then I had a decent session twice after that to get it back. I even taught Doc Frank how to play, and we broke even. The last hand made us exactly even before Lee's seminar started, the intermediate free one, which I'll get into now, because I went to that one. I opened a room for them and had them come. And so Frank was there, and Faso went to that. And so, you know, Lee's class, you know, I had gone to the tail end of the last one that he did when I was on the cruise. And, of course, it's always interesting. And that was always the good stuff. You know, the beginning, he always explained who he is. And, right. And I know all that stuff about him. So I'm sort of just sitting in the back of my iPad, fooling around playing Chinese by myself. And but then once he starts getting into the, you know, the heart of the class, talking about stuff, one of the things I think Lee should have done was say, listen, we're all going to have questions as I go along. But you know, maybe we should pass out some note cards or something and say, write down your questions as they come to you, and then ask them at the end of the, you know, leave a half an hour at the end for questions or something. Because inevitably people interrupt him and they start asking questions, and he gets sidetracked, but two, the questions they ask him, you know, most of the time are just ego-driven questions or things that aren't related, but they're just dying to ask him those questions. So they're not even going to listen to what he says. They just raise their hand and say, hey, what's going on? So Faso's line at dinner was, it's remarkable how many people think they can learn by talking. He cracked me up, man. I mean, it's so true. There are people who just want to hear their voice, you know, instead of listening to the person who's there that you came to listen to. Yeah. And yes, I know you want your question answered. I know that you think your question's the most important question in the universe that moment, but really just hold back. So when it started to wrap up and, you know, some of the things that Lee brought up were, you know, because people would ask him the questions about the math. Like, he would say something, whatever the answer is, you know, how much to bet or how much to raise or whatever it was, how much to risk of your stack and what the effective stacks are, all that kind of stuff. So they kept asking him questions about it, like, how do you know this is right or whatever. Ultimately, he just said, you know, and I'm paraphrasing the way I say it, but he was basically letting everybody know, you know, days and days of calculating, you know, the numbers and rivers of ink have been spilled to explain the math that we always hear in these seminars. So just trust it, okay? I don't want to spend 45 minutes going over the calculations for you because I'm only going to be here for 2 hours.
Right. Yeah.
You know, just trust what I'm telling you. I'm not misleading you. This is a seminar. I'm a pro, you know, whatever. But, you know, a lot of times they couldn't let it go. So really, if you're going to go to these types of things, just listen to them and learn from them. Don't try to find loopholes in his stuff. So one of the questions I asked as it got toward the end about the math was, I wondered if he assigned percentages to intangibles.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, a lot of times they talked about how close things are, whether it's, you know, a lot of times they'll use implied odds, which is an intangible if you think about it.
Right.
Because you don't really know if they're going to call.
Sure.
You know, or whatever. So I started asking him about, because he discussed position, of course, and then players that he felt that he could outplay. So I said, well, would you consider calling light knowing that it's a player that you can outplay, and then are you assigning percentages to that based on, you know, this amount of money in the pot, and then you're thinking, okay, well, I'm normally supposed to get, you know, 3-1 of my money on this call, and I'm only getting 2-1, but because this player is player X that I know I can outplay on the flop, do I add that extra percentage point or whatever to make it 3-1 or whatever? And so, I mean, he talked a little bit about that, and he was like, yeah, there are some things where you're kind of loose with the math. And I said, some of your math sounds fuzzy. Is this how you make up for it? And he was like, yeah, fuzzy math sometimes. But for the most part, you know, you stick with the hard numbers. And it was great. I mean, it's so nice to see him interact with people. And he had a pretty decent turnout. It was like maybe 25, 30 people to show up for that one. And, you know, considering that we had 100 people on the ship, right, and half of them are probably spouses, and then a few of them are, you know, crew members and stuff, or, you know, our dealers and stuff. So it was a good turnout. And then he got a lot of people to sign up for his pay one, too, where he, you know, gives them that one-on-one. I think Mike Wolf sat in with that, too, and helped with that. And so it was cool, but it's interesting to see that dynamic, people asking him questions and him responding and really learning.
I think there's a real difference, too, between asking a question and, like, oh, I was in this hand the other day, and I did this and did that, versus something that doesn't have that personality to it.
Yeah.
You know, so the question you're asking. And I think those are the questions you want to ask. The other ones where you're talking about some situation you're in, you know, those are the ones you go up to after the class or later on in the cruise when you see Lee at the pool or somebody somewhere and, you know, hey, I loved your class. I just had a question I didn't answer. That's the kind of stuff you do, I think. Just be mindful of the time, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was, like I said, it was really good, and I think it was really successful. I think the people appreciated him, and you could tell by, you know, when it got to the end of the session, and it was supposed to be over at 5:30. It was like 5:50, and we have to go to dinner and have to lock up the room, and they're still talking to him, chewing his ear. So you know they appreciated him being on board, and that was really cool.
Absolutely. I didn't see any of this, but every time I turned around and heard somebody talking about quads.
Quads?
We were on, had the poker room open like 64 hours maybe, and there had to be like 65 quads. dealt on this, and there's a couple of straight flushes. And I know a couple of dealers were telling me, like, you know what, Scott, I'm going to go back to my homeroom on Friday and sit in the box when it's $5.99 day, and I'm not going to deal anything close to quads. And on this ship, I've dealt seven of them, and there's no bad beat jackpot, so thanks.
I know, there was a player from England who lives in Florida now, but he was an English player. I played all week with him in horse, great guy. And in one session, and it might have been one rotation, if I remember, during horse, he made a straight flush and quads. He made a straight flush in Hold'em, it was either Hold'em or Omaha. And then in stud, he made quad jacks in the same rotation, I think it was. It was sick. Absolutely sick. I didn't make any hands like that. Matter of fact, now that we're bringing it up, I never got a hand better than pocket jacks in all the Hold'em hands I played all week. And I played a ton, even the limit Hold'em that one session. Never saw a pocket pair, even in stud. Any of the stud hands, I never had ace-ace, king-king, queen-queen in the hole. Not once, the entire week. Matter of fact, I only had ace-king once in Hold'em. Once, all week. That is so weird. So weird. Maybe that's why, because everyone else was getting the quads and everything, and I was getting the jack-jack or worse hands. I don't know. Crazy stuff, though. As you mentioned earlier, too, we had to miss a stop, Costa Maya. We didn't get to get off the ship because of high wind, and it was high wind. And it's funny because that night I was exhausted, and that was one of the nights where we turned the clocks back again.
Right.
So you think it's 3 a.m., but it's 5 a.m. So when I finally fell asleep and I woke up, Jeannie and I looked out the sliders, and we were still at sea. And she turns to me and she says, "Is it possible that we slept through an entire day? did we miss a whole day?" And I'm like, "No, either we're not there yet or we're not going, you know." And then it turned out, yeah, the high winds kept us from going to Costa Maya. And that happened to me once before at Costa Maya. They docked for like an hour, but the winds kept pushing the ship against the dock, and we were hitting the dock, and it was too much damage to the ship. You couldn't do it. And they had to call everybody from the land back onto the ship and get out of there. So there must be a lot of wind in Costa Maya.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it depends on these stops, but I mean, this doesn't happen often. In fact, actually, we talked to the casino manager, and it's only happened like four times in his career. But you know, some of these smaller ports, like some of the private island ports as well, too, and this one, you know, when the docks aren't as well established, it gets a little difficult to get the ship in. And you know, obviously, I was crushed for our good friend Dr. Frank, who you know, as soon as he booked this trip, he immediately started looking for something to do in Costa Maya, and he loves history. I mean, when last time we were in Cozumel, he and Laura and I went and did some minor ruins and stuff like that. And so he found this off-ship excursion where the guy gets you on a bus and drives you to these ruins and the relatively unexplored ruins in Costa Maya, which I think was interesting. And you get to go to that, and then you get to finish the trip by having a lunch in a Mayan family's house with them.
Holy cow.
And it sounded amazing, and so Laura and I decided to join him, and he talked it up all week on the cruise and got a bunch of other people to go. And of course, when we get to Costa Maya, we can't get off the ship. And, you know, we get up in the morning, and I can just tell how disappointed he was. I was disappointed as well, too, but Frank put all this work into it, and we're really looking forward to that. He didn't get off the ship in Cozumel, so
yeah,
he ended up spending the entire cruise on the ship, and I felt really bad for him. But the good news for our players was that since we're at sea, we were able to open the room up 4 or 5 hours earlier than we had planned to, and got an extra $20 tournament in, and let people play some poker. So, you know, for a poker cruise, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
Just skip board stop. So at least you got something else that you could do if you're a poker player. Like, you know, watch movies.
Yeah, well, that thing was that they weren't going to open the room till 11 a.m., so when I found out at like 9 that we weren't going off the ship, because Gene and I did the same thing. We skipped Cozumel because we've been there 100 times, but we only been to Costa Maya once, and like I said, we didn't get to get off the ship that day, so we were going to get off in Costa Maya, and so we didn't. Kind of bummed. So we're in the room, and I'm like, well, let's look through the channels, and I'm like, hey, Harry Potter's on, the last Harry Potter. And I'm like, well, you know, I have to admit, I did like the movies. I didn't read the books or anything, because, you know, whatever, I'm not a reader that way, but so I'm like, I'm going to watch it. So I'm watching, and for like 10 minutes, they're not saying anything. It's like, it's just all dramatic cinematography, and the scenes are playing out, or they're not saying anything, and I'm watching. This is like great. All of a sudden, Voldemort turns around and he says, "Donde es Harry Potter?" And I'm like, oh, man, I'm watching the Harry Potter in Spanish. This sucks. So I watched for like an hour of Harry Potter in Spanish, trying to see, because I'd seen the movie before, you know, trying to see how much I could figure out and everything, but it's pretty hilarious, the dubbing of Harry Potter in Spanish. Man, every time they'd say, Harry Potter, and they'd roll their R for like an hour. It was hilarious. Oh, my God. But that's one of the things I enjoy. Believe it or not, I know people are going to laugh, but I really enjoy, like, at night going back to bed, and then they have all these new movies on the TV that didn't really necessarily get to see, you know, in the theaters yet or whatever. So that's always kind of cool. You know, oh, wonder what movies I'm going to get to see while I'm, you know, trying to fall asleep at night, or when I just wake up in the morning before the room opens and stuff. So that was pretty cool. And apparently, Scott, I have a booming voice.
Yes.
Did you know this about me?
I did, actually. But it's always fun to hear from somebody else that doesn't listen to the show. I mean, we do get some listeners from the show on the cruise. But then we have people that obviously book, you know, they're either fans of the magazine, or sometimes they just do a web search. And, hey, Poker Cruise. All right, I'll go. I don't know what Annie Up is, but I'm going to go Poker Cruise. And so when they sit there and they listen to you talk, I mean, this guy was like, wow, you must work in radio. And then, well, sort of I do.
And then, like, the next day, like I mentioned how Frank, Jeannie, and I did not go to Cozumel. We chose to stay on the ship and chill. So I was like, hey, well, we're going to be in the Solarium, and Frank, if you're going to be in the Solarium, hang out, you know. So Jeannie and I go to the Solarium, and he's already there. So we had a chat about a bunch of stuff, and then he's like, I said, I'm going to soak. And Jeannie, you want to go? And she said, no, I'm going to read my Kindle. So Frank said, I'll come with you, I'll soak. So we go over into the hot tub area, and we're the only ones there. It's just me and Frank, and we're chatting about poker and what our favorite games are, and it basically was an all poker conversation. And we're talking and laughing and everything, and about an hour and a half later, I go back, because we went in the pool too, to cool down a little bit, and then I go back to Jeannie, and she stares at me and she goes, do you realize that everybody sitting over here on this side of the ship heard every single thing you said? I said, what? She goes, I read the same page on my Kindle 7 times because I couldn't concentrate because you were so loud. I was like, what? So it turns out that in the hot tub above it had a canopy. And so when you talked, it bounced off the canopy and echoed out. Because when I went into the pool area, she couldn't hear me at all. But when I was in the jacuzzi area, it kept bouncing out. And like everybody, when I went back to the thing, they're all looking at me like, you know, here's the idiot that wouldn't shut up and I couldn't sleep. You know, I felt so bad. I had no idea that my voice was bouncing off there. So for the rest of the trip, I was kind of like, I'll talk quieter because I know I have a booming voice and they're all laughing at me, you know. But yeah, apparently I'm a loud, obnoxious fellow. And I brought up the time changes earlier. This is the first time I was ever on a ship where they changed the clocks on us, and they did it twice.
Yeah, this is the first time they've been on twice for me. A lot of the ships I've been on, they've actually moved it back once because you move it into Central Time or something like that. But, you know, we just had Daylight Savings Time, so they had to account for that as well, too. So two nights we had to move our clocks back an hour, so we got an extra hour, which was great until you realize that you're gonna have to get those hours back.
Yeah,
you know, Daylight Savings Time, you get, like, what, 6 months to catch up?
Yeah.
On a cruise, you've got, like, 3 days.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, it is not a fun feeling on the last night of the cruise when you stay up and have a good time with all of the guests at the post party, knowing that the clock has got to move forward yet another hour when you go to bed, when you're already not going to get any sleep. And it was absolutely crazy.
One of my favorite moments of the cruise is driving home, or driving to go get the truck, and Laura's driving, and I'm in the back seat, and she says, Chris, I was worried. I was looking for you. And I'm like, why? Because I couldn't wake Scott up, she said. I was screaming, and he wouldn't wake up. That's how sound you were sleeping, because you were so tired from these damn time changes and staying up till 5 in the morning when it was actually 7 in the morning or something. And I was like, really? It's like, he's comatose. I said, you must have been hammered. And it turns out you weren't hammered. You were just so freaking tired.
Well, I probably was a little hammered. But yeah, more so tired. But yeah, she was. She really lost patience. She didn't know what to do. She actually left the room and found a house phone.
Called you.
Oh, the cruise had called the cabin, and I still didn't wake up.
I wish you did get a hold of me, because I would have loved trying to wake you up. That would have been great.
I have a feeling you would have been able to figure out a way to do it.
Yeah, I would have done something, quick. Believe me. I would use my booming voice.
And it's funny that you mentioned soaking in the jacuzzi. I took my swim trunks, and I was thinking, you know, when we get on the cruise, I always, first thing I think of when I'm driving over, because I'm just kind of a manic freak, is, where did I forget this time? I know I forgot something when I packed. And of all the things I don't want to forget, is like my swim trunks, right? You're on a cruise, you got pools, jacuzzis, you're getting off and swimming. I didn't forget my swim trunks. I literally never used them.
Oh, yeah.
Higher cruise.
Yeah, that's weird. I only used them once, too, but yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, it's just kind of funny just how busy you get doing a bunch of stuff.
Because you love to soak. Like, when we're on the road and stuff, the first thing you ask when we get to the hotel is there a pool or a sauna?
Yeah.
And then you always inevitably wake up 3 hours before me and go down and do it. So that is shocking that you didn't even use them.
Well, I did use the steam room quite a lot. But that's towel territory.
Yeah,
that's
towel territory.
but yeah, it's kind of funny. I went on a cruise and never got wet.
One of the great things about cruising is that you don't have to pay for your meals.
Yes.
Unless you want to dine in the fancy restaurants. And on this ship, they had an Italian place called Portofino's and then a steakhouse called Chops. And it turns out that you and I both actually enjoyed... Well, you went to both places. I went to Portofino's with you.
Yeah.
And we had a pretty decent meal. But, of course, we didn't pay for it.
No, of course not.
We would never fork over money. Of our own. We were too cheap.
I would say that was my personal policy until I did this.
Yeah, it was that good, huh?
And then I told people afterwards, probably the worst thing that could have happened is that the great casino staff on the ship treated us to Portofino's, and then Lee and his posse treated us to a birthday dinner at Chops the second night, which was very awesome, very much appreciated. But the worst thing that happened is that those guys did that, because now I know what it's like on the other side of that wall. And I'm like, you know what? That was a really good meal. I think I can justify paying $30 for that. And I probably will now. And had I not done that, I would have never known how good it was. And I would have been quite content to eat in the dining room every night. I've been quite content to dine for the last 47 cruises I've been on.
And I ordered a like a seafood medley type of dinner for mine. And it came out on this really cool contraption where it was like a stand. Sort of like a hangman thing.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was like an old banana hanger.
Yeah, and then the food hung off of it on a shish kebab. And you were terribly disappointed when you found out that I wasn't going to have to fumble around to try to get the food off of it.
Yeah, I was getting my phone out. I was trying to get the camera mode. I'm in the middle of this conversation. I was trying to do it slyly because I'm like, oh, I've got to get a photo of Chris with this. And then next thing I know, the little waiter dude just like collapses it all for you. I'm like, ah, it's no fun.
I know. That would have been pretty hilarious, me trying to get that stuff off of there. But the food was great. The seafood was really good, and I, of course, when you're in an Italian place, you order tiramisu, yeah. I did, and it was very good. They had their own twist on it with raspberries at the bottom of the serving. And the serving bowl, it was like a cup, and they made it out of chocolate. You know,
yeah.
So they had that
right,
liquid chocolate. Yeah, and it was really nice. It was really fancy. It was just, and it had a nice shot of, I guess it was Kahlua and something on the side, which I don't drink, so I just left it there. But I tasted it, and it was very good.
Very good.
So it was a lot of fun, and it was a really nice restaurant. And they really, I mean, they got the staff to do it. They have like three or four people, just like in the main dining room. You know, they always have the waiter, the assistant waiter, the maitre d' and everything. So they have a lot of people doubting on you or whatever. And very cool. And you guys had the wine. They had that little contraption that hung out of the bottle of the wine, little goblet thing they pour it into first before it pours back out.
And Laura's funny because she's the wine drinker. I mean, I drink wine too, but she's kind of the one that always does her ordering. And she's like, you know what? I don't need a freaking show for my wine. Just give me my wine.
No, it's all the experience. Plus that whole thing, I guess that helps it breathe or something, right?
Yeah,
that's why they do it.
Yeah, it's more than a show. It's got some practical application as well.
Yeah, too. Yeah, absolutely.
But I'll say this. I mean, Laura and I are not the type to go to fancy dinners much. We might go to one or two a year on big occasions. But, you know, we're more than happy just to go to get chicken wings.
Yeah, bucket of wings and a beer.
Yeah, as we are to go to these fine restaurants. And I guess what I would say is if people are like us, I mean, this is a great opportunity on the cruise ship. Even though I'm still morally opposed to paying for food on a cruise ship. I mean, for $20 or $30, I mean, it really was a fancy dining experience. You know, the atmosphere was like that. The food quality is better. The rest was really good. And for only doing it $30, that's probably a good chance to experience that. You know, where if you go on land, you're going to spend $150-$200 maybe.
Yeah.
Or something comparable.
Yeah.
I do see the beauty of it now. My eyes have been opened.
And I think the same can be held for the dining room experience, though. I still think that the meals that you're being exposed to there are the same kind of thing where you might spend $80 to $100 for that type of meal with your significant other or whatever. So, but you know, and I, you know me, it's tough too because I'm on this whole don't eat too much food diet thing where that's how I've lost all this weight. So when I get on the cruise ships, I try to be as disciplined as possible. But the selections are so good, and you want to taste them all. That's that opportunity for you to, you know, hey, I may not want to pay for escargot in the real world because it's expensive, and I don't know if I'm going to like it. But they'll have it on the ship, and you can try it, you know, that kind of thing. So that's what I always like too, is when you're sitting with the passengers and it's their vacation of a lifetime type of thing, and you get to experience it all over through their eyes and stuff, through dinner and stuff. It's kind of cool. I do enjoy the dining experience that way.
Yeah, I'm not one to really watch my weight either, but there's a big old scale there in the steam room, the locker room on the ship. So I was always smart to get on there after I steamed. I was hoping to steam off some of that steak I had the night before, right? And so this time, I did my steam, I showered, and I jumped on there. And I literally gained 2 pounds every day. I could watch it go. It was like 180, 182, 184.
Gonna have to up the Lipitor there, buddy. But you mentioned, too, that they took you out for your birthday. You actually turned 40 this week on the ship, on our last day on the ship. We all sang happy birthday to you as we were closing the room for good, packing up the equipment and everything when the clock struck midnight. And so now that gray hair you have is fitting.
Yes, it is legitimate now.
It's all legitimate.
It's no longer premature.
You can no longer make fun of me for being old because you, too, are now, according to Harris and Horseshoe Tunica, basically a senior citizen. So enjoy yourself. Life is over for you now. It's all downhill from here.
Yes, absolutely. But we had a good post-party. Much of the passengers and all the staff came up and... we stayed up way too late the last night, and certainly made turning 40 a little easier. And then, of course, as I joked the next morning, Laura literally had to wake me up because I did not want to wake up as a 40-year-old.
Well, if you, too, want to have a chance at waking Scott up, we still have two more cruises planned this year. Don't forget, August 27th, Port Canaveral, November 10th, Baltimore, Maryland. AnyUpMagazine.com/cruise for more info. Well, it was a good week, though. I'm glad to be back, though, and looking forward to the next one.
Absolutely.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.